There were covered ox carts rumbling up the street to the castle. Agnes and Oates stood to one side and watched them. The drivers didn't seem interested in the bystanders. They wore drab, ill-fitting clothing, but an unusual touch was the scarf each one had wrapped around his neck so tightly that it might have been a bandage. "Either there's a plague of sore throats in Uberwald, or there will be nasty little puncture wounds under those, I'll bet," said Agnes. "I do know a bit about the way they're supposed to control people," said Oates. "Yes? It sounds silly, but it was in an old book. Well, they find single-minded people easier to control." "Single-minded?" said Agnes, suspiciously. More carts rolled past. "It doesn't sound right, I know. You'd think strong-minded people would be harder to affect. I suppose a big target is easier to hit. In some of the villages, apparently, vampire hunters get roaring drunk first. Protection, you see. You can't punch fog." "So we're fog," said Perdita. "So's he, by the look of him." Agnes shrugged. There was a certain bucolic look to the faces of the cart drivers. Of course you got that in Lancre too, but in Lancre it was overlaid by a mixture of guile, common sense, and stubborn rock-headedness. Here, the eyes behind the faces had a switched-off look. "Like cattle," said Perdita. "Yes," said Agnes. "Pardon?" said Oates. "Just thinking aloud." And she thought of the way one man could so easily control a herd of cows, any one of which could have left him as a small damp depression in the ground had it wanted to. Somehow, they never got around to thinking about it. "Supposing they are better than us," she thought. "Supposing that, compared to them, we're just..." "You're too close to the castle," snapped Perdita. "You're thinking cow thoughts." Then Agnes realized that there was a squad of men marching behind the carts. They didn't look at all like the carts' drivers. "And these," said Perdita, "are the cattle prods." They had uniforms of a sort, with the black and white crest of the Magpies. But they weren't a body of men that looked smart in a uniform. They looked very much like men who killed other people for money. And not even for a lot of money. They looked, in short, like men who'd cheerfully eat a puppy sandwich. Several of them leered at Agnes when they went past, but it was only a generic leer that was simply leered on the basis that she had a dress on. More wagons came up behind them. "Nanny Ogg says you must take him by the foreskin," Agnes said, and darted forward as the last wagon rumbled past. "She does? I'm afraid so. You get used to it." She caught the back of the cart and pulled herself up, beckoning him hastily to follow. "Are you trying to impress me?" he said as she hauled him on board. "Not you," she said, and realized at this point that what she was sitting on was a coffin. There were two of them in the back of the cart, packed around with straw. "Are they, moving the furniture in?" said Oates.
I think it might be occupied," said Agnes.
She almost shrieked when he removed the lid. The coffin was empty.
"You idiot! Supposing there was someone in there?"
"Vampires are weak during the day. Everyone knows that," said Oates reproachfully.
"I can feel them here somewhere,"
said Agnes. The rattling of the cart changed as it rumbled onto the cobblestones of the courtyard.
Get off the other one and I'll have a look. But supposing..."
He pushed her off and raised the lid before she could protest further.
No vampire in there either," he said. "Supposing one had just reached out and grabbed you by the throat?" "Om is my shield," said Oates.
"Really? That's nice."
"You may chortle."
"I didn't chortle."
"You can if you want to. But I'm sure we are doing the right thing. Did not Sonaton defeat the beast of Bartrigore in its very cave?"
"I dunno."
"He did. And didn't the prophet, Erdjure vanquish the dragon of Sluth on the plain of Gidral after 3 days' fighting?"
"I don't know that we've got that much time."
"And wasn't it true that the sons of Exequiel beat the hosts of Mirilom?"
"Yes. You've heard of that?"
"No. Listen, we've stopped. I don't particularly want us to be found, do you? Not right now. And not by those guards. They didn't look nice men at all."
They exchanged a meaningful glance over the coffins concerning a certain inevitability about the immediate future.
"They'll notice they're heavier, won't they?" said Oates. "Those people driving the carts didn't look as though they noticed anything very much."
Agnes stared at the coffin beside her. There was some dirt in the bottom, but it was otherwise quite clean, and had a pillow at the head end. There were also some side pockets in the lining.
"It's the easiest way in," she said. "You get into this one, I'll get into that one. And look, those people you just told me about, were they real historical characters?"
"Certainly. They..."
"Well, don't try to imitate them yet, all right? Otherwise you'll be a historical character too."
She shut the lid, and still felt there was a vampire around. Her hand touched the side pocket. There was something soft yet spiky in there. Her fingers explored it in fascinated horror, and discovered it to be a ball of wool with a couple of long knitting needles stuck through it, suggesting either a very domesticated form of voodoo, or that someone was knitting a sock. Who knitted socks in a coffin? On the other hand, perhaps even vampires couldn't sleep sometimes, and tossed and turned all day. She braced herself as the coffin was picked up, and tried to occupy her mind by working out where it was being taken. She heard the sound of footsteps on the cobbles, and then the ring of the flagstones on the main steps echoing in the great hall. A sudden dip. That meant the cellars. Logical, really, but not good.
"You're doing this to impress me," said Perdita. "You're doing it to try to be extrovert and dynamic."
"Shut up," Agnes thought.
A voice outside said, "Put them down there and push off." That was the one who called himself Igor. Agnes wished she'd thought of a weapon. "Get rid of me, would they?" the voice went on against a background of disappearing footsteps. "This is all going to end in tears. It's all very well for them, but who has to go and sweep up the dust, eh? That's what I'd like to know. Who's it has to pull their heads out of the pickle jars? Who's it has to find them under the ice? I must have put out more steaks than I've had Wrigley's dinners."
Light flooded in as the coffin lid was removed. Igor stared at Agnes. Agnes stared at Igor. Igor unfroze first. He smiled. He had a geometrically interesting smile because of the row of stitches right across it, and said,
"Dear me, someone's been listening to too many stories. Got any garlic?"
"Masses," Agnes lied.
"Won't work. Any holy water?"
"Gallons."
"It..."
A coffin lid smacked down on Igor's head, making an oddly metallic sound. He reached up slowly to rub the spot and then turned around. This time, the lid smacked into his face.
"Oh, shit," he said, and folded up.
Oates appeared, face aglow with adrenaline and righteousness.
"I smote him mightily."
"Good, good, let's get out of here. Help me up."
"My wrath descended upon him like..."
"It was a heavy lid and he's not that young," said Agnes. "Look, I used to play down here. I know how to get to the back stairs."
"He's not a vampire."
"He looks like one.
First time I've ever seen a patchwork man."
"He's a servant. Now please come." Agnes paused. "Can you make holy water?"
"What? Here? I mean, bless it, or dedicate it to Om, or boil the hell out of it, perhaps," said Agnes. "There is a small ceremony I can..."
He stopped.
"That's right. Vampires can be stopped by holy water."
"Good. We'll go via the kitchens, then."
The huge kitchens were almost empty. They never bustled these days, since the royal couple were not the sort who demanded 3 meat courses with every meal, and at the moment there was only Mrs. Scorbick, the cook, in there, calmly rolling out pastry.
"Afternoon, Mrs. Scorbick," said Agnes, deciding the best course was to march past and rely on the authority of the pointy hat. "We've just dropped in for some water, don't worry. I know where the pump is, but if you've got a couple of empty bottles, that would be helpful."
"That's right, dear," said Mrs. Scorbick.
Agnes stopped and turned. Mrs. Scorbick was famously acerbic, especially on the subject of soya, nut cutlets, vegetarian meals, and any vegetable that couldn't be boiled until it was yellow. Even the king hesitated to set foot in her kitchen, but whereas he only got an angry silence, lesser mortals got the full force of her generalized wrath. Mrs. Scorbick was permanently angry, in the same way that mountains are permanently large. Today she was wearing a white dress, a white apron, a big white mob cap, and a white bandage around her throat. She also looked, for want of any better word, happy. Agnes urgently waved Oates towards the pump.
"Find something to fill up," she hissed,
and then said brightly, "How are you feeling, Mrs. Scorbick?"
"All the better for you asking, miss."
"I expect you're busy with all these visitors."
"Yes, miss,"
Agnes coughed. "And what did you give them for breakfast?" The cook's huge pink brow wrinkled.
"Can't remember, miss."
"Well done," Oates nudged her. "I've filled up a couple of empty bottles, and I said the purification rite of Om over them. And will that work? You must have faith." The cook was watching them amiably.
"Thank you, Mrs. Scorbick," said Agnes. "Please get on with, whatever you were doing."
"Yes, miss."
The cook turned back to her rolling pin.
"Plenty of meals on her," said Perdita. "Cook and larder all in one."
"That was tasteless," said Agnes.
"What was?" said the priest.
"Oh, just a thought I had. Let's go up the back stairs."
They were bare stone, communicating with the public bits of the keep via a door at every level. On the other side of those doors it was still bare stone, but a better class of masonry altogether, and with tapestries and carpets. Agnes pushed open a door. A couple of Uberwald people were ambling along the corridor beyond, carrying something covered in a cloth. They didn't spare the newcomers a glance as Agnes led the way to the royal apartments. Magrat was standing on a chair when they came in. She looked down at them while little painted wooden stars and animals tangled themselves around her upraised arm.
"Wretched things," she said. "You'd think it would be easy, wouldn't you? Hello, Agnes. Could you hold the chair?"
"What you doing?" said Agnes. She looked carefully.
There was no bandage around Magrat's neck.
"Trying to hook this mobile onto the chandelier," said Magrat. "Ah, that's done it. But it tangles up all the time. Verence said it's very good for young children to see lots of bright colours and shapes. It speeds development, he says, but I can't find Millie anywhere."
"There's a castle full of vampires and she's decorating the playroom," said Perdita. "What's wrong with this woodcut?"
Somehow Agnes couldn't bring herself to blurt out a warning. Apart from anything else, the chair looked wobbly.
"Little Esme's only 2 weeks old," said Agnes. "Isn't that a bit young for education?"
"Never too early to start," he says. "What can I do for you?"
"We need you to come with us. Right now."
"Why?" said Magrat, and to Agnes's relief she stepped down from the chair.
"Why, Magrat? There's vampires in the castle. The Magpier family are vampires."
"Don't be silly, they're very pleasant people. I was talking to the Countess only this morning."
"What about?" Agnes demanded. "I bet you can't remember."
"I am Queen, Agnes," said Magrat reproachfully.
"Sorry, but they affect people's minds."
"Yours?"
No, not mine. It seems I'm immune," Agnes lied.
"And his?" said Magrat sharply.
"I am protected by my faith in Om," said Oates.
Magrat raised her eyebrows at Agnes. "Is he?" Agnes shrugged.
"Apparently."
Magrat leaned closer.
"He's not drunk, is he? He's holding 2 beer bottles.
"They're full of holy water," Agnes whispered.
"Verence said Omnianism seemed a very sensible and stable religion," hissed Magrat.
They both looked at Oates, mentally trying the words on him for size.
"Are we, leaving?" he said.
"Of course not," snapped Magrat, straightening up. "This is silly, Agnes. I'm a married woman. I'm queen. I've got a little baby, and you come in here telling me we've got vampires. I've got guests here, and..."
"The guests are vampires, Your Majesty," said Agnes. "The king invited them."
"Verence says we have to learn to deal with all sorts of people."
"We think Granny Weatherwax is in very bad trouble," said Agnes.
Magrat stopped.
"How bad?" she said.
"Nanny Og is very worried, quite snappish. She says it needs 3 of us to find Granny."
"Well, I...
"And Granny's taken the box, whatever that means," said Agnes.
"The one she keeps in the dresser?"
"Yes. Nanny wouldn't tell me much about what was in it."
Magrat opened up her hands like an angler measuring a medium-sized fish. "The polished wooden box, about this size?"
"I don't know. I've never seen it. Nanny seemed to think it was important. She didn't say what was in it,"
Agnes repeated, just in case Magrat hadn't got the hint. Magrat clasped her hands together and looked down, biting her knuckles.
When she looked up, her face was set with purpose. She pointed at Oates.
You, find a bag or something, and empty into it all the stuff in the top drawer over there, and take the potty, and the little truck, and the stuffed animals, and the bag of nappies, and the bag for used nappies, and the bath, and the bag with the towels, and the box of toys, and the wind-up things, and the musical box, and the bag with the little suits in, and the woolly hat, and you, Agnes, find something we can make into a sling. You came up the back stairs, we'll go down the same way. What do we need a sling for?
Magrat leaned over the crib and picked up the baby, wrapped in a blanket.
I'm not going to leave her here, am I? She said.
There was a clatter from the direction of Mightily Oates. He already had both arms full and a large stuffed rabbit in his teeth.
Do we need all of that? Said Agnes.
You never know, said Magrat.
Even the box of toys?
Berence thinks she might be an early developer, said Magrat.
She's a couple of weeks old.
Yes, but stimulus at an early age is vital to the development of the growing brain, said Magrat,
laying baby Esme on the table and shuffling her into a romper suit.
Also, we have to get on top of her hand-eye coordination as soon as possible. It's no good just letting things slide. Oh, yes, if you can bring the little slide, too, and the yellow rubber duck, and the sponge in the shape of a teddy bear, and the teddy bear in the shape of a sponge.
There was another crash from the mound around Oates.
Why is the box so important? Said Agnes.
Not important as such, said Magrat.
She looked over her shoulder.
Oh, and put in that rag doll, will you? I'm sure she's focusing on it. Oh, blast. The red bag has got the medicines in it. Thank you. What was it you asked me?
Granny's box, Agnes hinted.
Oh, it's just important to her.
It's magical.
What? No. Not as far as I know, but everything in it belongs to her, you see, not to the cottage, said Magrat, picking up her daughter. Who's a good girl, then, you are?
She looked around.
Have we forgotten anything?
Oates spat out the rabbit.
Possibly the, ceiling, he said.
Then let's go.
Magpies flocked around the castle tower. Most magpie rhymes peter out at around 10 or 12, but here were hundreds of birds, enough to satisfy any possible prediction. There are many rhymes about magpies, but none of them is very reliable because they are not the ones the magpies know themselves. The Count sat in the darkness below, listening to their minds. Images flashed behind his eyes. This was the way to run a country, he reflected. Human minds were so hard to read, unless they were so close that you could see the words just hovering below actual vocalization. But the birds could get everywhere, see every worker in the fields and hunter in the forest. They were good listeners, too, much better than bats or rats. Once again, tradition was overturned. No sign of Granny, though. Some trick, perhaps. It didn't matter. Eventually she'd find him. She wouldn't hide for long. It wasn't in her nature. Weatherwaxes would always stand and fight, even when they knew they would be beaten. So predictable. Several of the birds had seen a busy little figure trudging across the kingdom, leading a donkey laden with falconry gear. The Count had taken a look at Hodges Arg, found a mind crammed end to end with hawks, and dismissed him. He and his silly birds would have to go eventually, of course, because he made the magpies nervous. He made a note to mention this to the guards.
Oh.
But there was probably no combination of vowels that could do justice to the cry Nanny Og made on seeing a young baby. It included sounds only known to cats.
Isn't she a little precious? Nanny crooned. I've probably got a sweetie somewhere.
She's not on solids, said Magrat.
Still keeping you up at nights
and days, but she slept well today, thank goodness.
Nanny, give her to Mr. Oates and let's sort this out right away. The young priest took the baby nervously, holding it, as some men do, as if it would break or at least explode.
There, he said vaguely.
Now, what's this about Granny? Said Magrat.
They told her, interrupting one another at important bits.
The gnarly ground over towards the top of the forest, said Magrat when they were nearly finished.
That's right, said Nanny.
What is gnarly ground? Said Agnes.
There's a lot of magic in these mountains, right? Said Nanny. And everyone knows mountains get made when lumps of land bang together, right? Well, when the magic gets trapped, you sort of Get a bit of land where the space is sort of scrunched up, right? It'd be quite big if it could, but it's like a bit of gnarly wood in an old tree. Or a used hanky, all folded up small, but still big in a different way. But I've been up there and it's just a bit of moorland. You've got to know the right direction, said Nanny. Damn hard to scry in a place like that. It goes all wobbly. It's like trying to look at something close up and a long way away at the same time. It makes your crystal ball water. She pulled the green ball towards her. Now you two push and I'll steer. Are you going to do some magic? Said Oates behind them. What's the problem? Said Nanny. I mean, does it involve, he coloured up, removing your garments and dancing around and, summoning lewd and salacious creatures? Only I'm afraid I couldn't be a party to that. The Book of Om forbids consorting with, false enchanters and deceitful soothsayers, you see. I wouldn't consort with false enchanters neither, said Nanny. Their beards fall off. We're real, said Magrat. And we certainly don't summon lewd and salacious creatures, said Agnes. Unless we want to, said Nanny Og, almost under her breath. Well, all right then, said Oates. As they unwound the power, Agnes heard Perdita think, I don't like Magrat. She's not like she used to be. Well, of course she's not. But she's taking charge. She's not cringing slightly like she used to. She's not wet. That's because she's a mother, Agnes thought. Mothers are only slightly damp. She was not herself hugely in favour of motherhood in general. Obviously it was necessary, but it wasn't exactly difficult. Even cats managed it. But women acted as if they'd been given a medal that entitled them to boss people around. It was as if just because they'd got the label which said mother, everyone else got a tiny part of the label that said child. She gave a mental shrug and concentrated on the craft in hand. Light grew and faded inside the green globe. Agnes had only scried a few times before, but she didn't remember the light pulsing like this. Every time it dissolved into an image, the light flickered and bounced to somewhere else. A patch of heather, a tree, boiling clouds. And then Granny Weatherwax came and went. The image appeared and was gone in an instant, and the glow that rolled in with a finality told Agnes that this was all, folks. She was lying down, said Magrat. It was all fuzzy. Then she's in one of the caves. She said once she goes up there to be alone with her thoughts, said Nanny. And did you catch that little twitch? She's trying to keep us out. The caves up there are just scoops in the rock, said Agnes. Yes and no, said Nanny. Did I see her holding a card in her hands? The I ain't dead card, said Magrat. No, she'd left that in the cottage. Just when we really need her, she goes away into a cave. Does she know we need her? Did she know about the vampires? Said Agnes. Can't we go and ask her? Said Magrat. We can't fly all the way, said Nanny, scratching her chin. Can't fly properly over gnarly ground. The broomsticks act funny. Then we'll walk the rest, said Magrat. It's hours to sunset. You're not coming, are you? Said Agnes, aghast. Yes, of course. But what about the baby? She seems to like it in the sling, and it keeps her warm, and it's not as if there's monsters up there, said Magrat. Anyway, I think it's possible to combine motherhood and a career. I thought you'd given up witchcraft, said Agnes. Yes, well, yes, let's make sure Granny's all right and get this sorted out, and then obviously I'll have other things to do.
But it could be dangerous, said Agnes. Don't you think so, Nanny?
Nanny Og turned her chair and looked at the baby.
Coochie, coochie, she said.
A small head looked around and Esme opened her blue eyes. Nanny Og stared thoughtfully.
Take her with us, she said at last. I used to take our Jason everywhere when he was tiny. They like being with the mum.
She gave the baby another long, hard look.
Yes, she went on. I think that'd be a damn good idea. I feel perhaps there is a little that I'd, be able to do, Oates said. Oh, it'd be too dangerous to take you, said Nanny dismissively. But of course, my prayers will go with you. That's nice, Nanny sniffed.
Drizzling rain soaked Hodges Arg as he trudged back to the castle. The damp had got into the lure, and the noise it made now could only attract some strange lost creature skulking in ancient estuaries, or possibly a sheep with a very sore throat. And then he heard the chattering of magpies.
He tied the donkey to a sapling and stepped out into a clearing. The birds were screaming in the trees around him, but erupted away at the sight of King Henry on her perch on the donkey. Crouched against a mossy rock was a small magpie. It was bedraggled and wrong, as if put together by someone who had seen one but didn't know how it was supposed to work. It struggled when it saw him. There was a fluffing of feathers, and now a smaller version of King Henry was trying to unfold its tattered wings. He backed away. On her perch, the hooded eagle had its head turned to the strange bird, which was now a pigeon, a thrush, a wren. A sudden intimation of doom made Hodgesarg cover his eyes, but he saw the flash through the skin of his fingers, felt the thump of the flame, and smelled the scorched hairs on the back of his hand. A few tufts of grass smouldered on the edge of a circle of scorched earth. Inside it, a few pathetic bones glowed red-hot and then crumbled into fine ash. Away in the forest, the magpies screamed. Count Magpier stirred in the darkness of his room and opened his eyes. The pupils widened to take in more light.
"I think she has gone to ground," he said.
"That was remarkably quick," said the Countess. "I thought you said she was quite powerful."
"Oh, indeed, but human, and she's getting older. With age comes doubt. It's so simple. All alone in that barren cottage, no company but the candlelight, it's so simple to open up all the little cracks and let her mind turn in on itself. It's like watching a forest fire when the wind changes and suddenly it's roaring down on all the houses you thought were built so strongly."
"So graphically put. Thank you. You were so successful in escrow, I know.
A model for the future. Vampires and humans in harmony at last.
There is no need for this animosity, just as I have always said."
The Countess walked over to the window and gingerly pulled aside the curtain. Despite the overcast sky, grey light filtered in.
"There's no requirement to be so cautious about this either," said her husband, coming up behind her and jerking the curtain aside.
The Countess shuddered and turned her face away.
"You see, still harmless. Every day, in every way, we get better and better," said Count Magpier cheerfully. "Self-help, positive thinking, training, familiarity, garlic, a pleasant seasoning, lemons, merely an acquired taste. Why, yesterday I mislaid a sock and, I simply don't care. I have lots of socks. Extra socks can be arranged."
His smile faded when he saw his wife's expression.
"The word but is on the tip of your tongue," he said flatly. "I was just going to say that there were no witches in escrow, and the place is all the better for it." "Of course, but there you go again, my dear. There is no room for but in our vocabulary. Verence was right, oddly enough. There's a new world coming, and there won't be any room in it for those ghastly little gnomes or witches or centaurs, and especially not for the firebirds. Away with them. Let us progress. They are unfitted for survival."
"You only wounded that phoenix, though."
"My point exactly. It allowed itself to be hurt, and therefore extinction looms. No, my dear, if we won't fade with the old world, we must make shift in the new. Witches? Ha! I'm afraid witches are all in the past now."